Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today, Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Good to see you, Daniel.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing well, ready and raring to go today. We will be talking about a subject in the news because it happened yesterday, and that has to do with us getting out of the UN Human Rights Council. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a pretty good idea. I want to discuss the pros and cons of that. But before we do that, I wanted to try something slightly different today. I want to see if we can broaden what we're talking about and have you come up with some news item that you caught and you would like to just comment on without us making a program of it. And I have a news item too that I would just like to call attention to it to our viewers. So
okay, well, this is something we'd considered as a possible topic for today because we've been covering it closely, but it's the issue of Syria and particularly southwestern Syria. And the item would be that the U.S. State Department spokesman Heather Nauert released yet another warning, yet another statement, because we talked about a statement earlier this week, yet another statement to the Syrian government that it dare not launch a military operation in Syria.
Yeah.
Warning the Syrians, because in southwestern Syria, there's still a couple of pockets. Essentially, it's the FSA, Free Syrian Army, but they're now mixed with Al-Qaeda elements. They're mixed with Al-Qaeda. Now we're referenced a deconfliction zone, but it's a unilaterally declared deconfliction zone by the U.S. Syria never signed off on deconflicting, i.e. not attacking Al-Qaeda in Syria. So whereas you'd think that the U.S. would be cheering this push to eliminate Al-Qaeda in the last pockets of ISIS, in fact, it's not. And that makes a lot of people wonder what the U.S. is really up to here. The other big issue, though, is that the Russians, the Iraqis, the Iranians, and the Syrians got together in Baghdad, and they all agreed that we need to do this push, we need to get rid of these groups here. So that could actually lead to some sort of a clash with the U.S. So that's what we're watching.
It seems so strange that we have to make this point out. It seems to be obvious that a government has a right to defend their sovereignty and their territory, but they make that really, really wild stuff. And to mention the other than they think you're the extremist in suggesting, maybe they don't have this authority for us to go in there and tell them what to do. Well, my little topic here, short view, has to do with money issues, which is always important, and it's always connected with foreign policy. And this has to do with what Russia has done recently. One thing they've done recently is they've bought or sold some oil not in dollars. And that's a good trend. They're moving in that direction. They've threatened to, but they've actually had a transaction of a significant amount of oil being sold that way. But in April, they sold half of their holdings of U.S. treasuries.
Wow.
And they had over $100 billion, and they sold more than $50 billion. So that is a big deal. But it wasn't in the news, and it was absorbed rather easily. And, you know, it sounds like a lot, and if it were real money, it would be. But because in a crisis like the last recession we had, the Fed can create trillions of dollars and absorb and buy and sell and do whatever they want. So it really wasn't in the news. But this month in May, after they got their cash out, they bought 600,000 ounces of gold. And if you look back at their gold holdings in the last 10 years, they've had a tremendous increase in their gold holdings. So there's something going on. But then again, you say 600,000, I guess in the scheme of things, that's not much. But I think it's significant. It's more than you and I have. But it really didn't change the market. Matter of fact, the gold's been down a little bit in the last several weeks, so it didn't make a difference. But the way I see that is that the gold price is crucial for governments, especially our government, and they don't want to have the market, rocking and reeling. So they will enter the market and they will prop up prices. I think they get in the future market so they can absorb something like that, and that's no big deal. But it's a big deal if that's a trend and if it continues. Russians have been buying gold, and there's going to be others. China has not been too anxious to accumulate more of our treasuries, and they've sold some too. So these are the early signs signs that there may be we may be approaching that point of a major new monetary system.
Hmm. Interesting.
But on today's program, what I want to talk about is this announcement by Nikki Haley. Mm-hmm. And she did this along with her buddy, Mike Pompeo,
yeah.
Two good constitutionalists that really believe in U.S. sovereignty and this sort of thing. But they happen to fit nicely into the neocon camp. I don't know how much they would consider that an insult, but if you describe what they believe in, that's where most people put them, because they want us to be, you know, very, very aggressive. But what they've announced is for us to drop out of the UN Human Rights Council, mm-hmm. which used to be a commission. It didn't work well because it was politicized, so they have a new one. And as one would expect, the new one's been politicized as well. As one would expect or could charge, the UN was political and has been political from 1948, from the time of its inception. And, of course, I always remember the thing that we went to war in 1950 because of a UN resolution. Of course, it wasn't a war and it wasn't a declaration, yet look at what we left in Korea. So getting out of this council, in a way, I could say, well, that's good. We need to back away. We got out of UNESCO, and they got a little bit rambunctious and becoming political. But both on UNESCO and on this, it can't be ignored that Israel's very much involved in this. Our government feels like Israel's getting a bad deal. But if you're dealing with cleaning up our act in the United Nations Human Rights Council, why wouldn't they talk about another member, Saudi Arabia, you know? And so they are outraged, and of course they're bad people now for getting out. I would say, yeah, get out, but get out of the whole thing. I think getting out is fine. If I had to vote on it, I'd say, yeah, get out. But the whole thing is, I don't think they're getting out exactly because of their beliefs being similar to ours, that we need to just get out of the whole mess. We don't need it to provide for national security.
Yeah, that's what makes it a little more complicated, because we agree with the idea of getting out of this council. And there's so much wrong with the council, as you point out. And this council took over for the commission in 2006. That's an important date, because that's when the UN adopted this policy of responsibility to protect. And I do think what little good the UN was that it was a collection of sovereign states who maintained their sovereignty and agreed to get together and work together to avoid war. That sounds like a very fine thing. But the R2P in 2006, the adoption of this policy, completely undermined that sovereignty and said, if a bunch of us get together and decide that one state is a bad guy, a bad actor, we're going to go after that one. We're going to use force if necessary. And that's really been the defining feature of the UN. And ironically enough, when that change happened is really when the neocons and a lot of conservatives learned to love the UN, because they viewed it as a way, we can get in there, we're footing the bills anyway, we can do a fig leaf, a human rights fig leaf, and we can change all the governments we want.
You know, in a way, it reminds me of what goes on in our own government. We have Republicans and Democrats fighting over control of the government, fighting over foreign policy and monetary policy and welfare, and they want the power and the control, and the political fights are for real. But policies really don't change. The principles don't change. So we want more control and more to say, but it's almost like, who gets the mold the policy? They're not saying that we shouldn't be in it, we should get out, and it doesn't work. It doesn't really work for peace, and it does more to work for war. And but that isn't the case. They just sort of think that if we are in charge, and the Republicans are in charge, and they can devise the policy, then it's okay. But I look at it on the principle the same way on monetary policy. Just getting a better chairman of the Federal Reserve Board that might be smarter. Well, maybe he's trying to do something. It's impossible to know what the interest rates should be. And this is what these details are all about. Does anybody really know what is best for Libya? And we've talked about Libya a whole lot.
Yeah.
And what we have done there, evidently we didn't know exactly what was best for Libya, even though in theory, oh yeah, he was a bad guy. We'll get rid of him. We'll put five more bad guys in there that can kill each other and disrupt the whole area.
Well, Haley's and Pompeo's complaint about the UN Human Rights Council is she wrote a letter blaming a lot of the NGOs. Now, NGOs have a place at the table. which in itself, if you think about it, is problematic because a non-governmental organization, first of all, is very often paid for by governments rather than just private donations. But they don't have a legitimate democratic constituency, if you think about it. No one has elected an NGO to represent them. So the whole idea conceptually of having NGOs at the table as if they were states, as pseudo-states, is a problem. Haley was upset that they were blocking reform that she wanted. A decent point. As you pointed out earlier, there's a perception that it's biased against Israel, and they do pass a lot of resolutions criticizing Israel. And the other thing the U.S. is upset about is too many abusers on the council. And this is where I held my breath. Were they going to talk about Saudi Arabia? No. It was China, Cuba, Venezuela, and Congo.
But would they ever talk about United States? I bet you we're not pure either. I mean, what were we talking about yesterday? A bomb every 12 minutes around abusing somebody's right. You know, I've had some progressive groups come to visit me in Washington, and you sat in on some of these meetings. They were progressives, and they were very sincere, and they would come because they were interested in my position on foreign policy and even individual liberty. But the names of their groups and what they want to talk about are human rights.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is good, and we know what we're talking about. But it always made me a little bit nervous because I know as soon as they throw that word human rights in, they're not talking about individual rights. They're talking about management of groups. And I think they lower the standard of what rights are all about. But I don't know. What other kind of rights are there if there aren't human rights? It's the human human beings that have rights, and it's the individual. But as soon as you get into this, it's the human rights of somebody who is suffering because they're of a certain group,
mm-hmm.
and then that becomes a human right. Too often, when they use the term human rights, they're talking about a collective idea of rights, even though many times, like I said, they would come in and they were certainly anti-war, these groups were.
Yeah.
Some of the so-called progressives in Washington and in on the Congress, they're not very good. But the outside groups were pretty good, and we still talk with them about trying to work together. But I think the full understanding of human rights versus individual rights is an important issue, but you never hear much discussion about that.
And I think it's purposefully made vague because you can put anything you want in that basket. One of the things they got off the rails, many people would say they got off the rails, they started going on into climate change. People's lifestyle choices, defending, you know, all countries may not accept that, all cultures may not accept all of these things. The other thing the U.S. was upset about is that it only wants democracies to be part of the Human Rights Council. Okay, maybe that makes sense, but who gets to decide? And I would guess that Nikki Haley would not believe that Iran is a democracy, whereas a lot of people would argue that it is. They do have open, free elections. They're slightly managed because the parties are approved by the religious council, but they're still competing ideas. They're still conservatives versus liberals. So there are a lot of countries like that. What about China? It's not totally authoritarian. There is some democracy there. So that's the issue. It's just too vague. The whole concept is wrong, I think, and the UN just shouldn't be doing it.
Of course, the best democracy is an economic democracy. Voting with your wallet and your pocketbook and freedom of exchange, you get good democracy. But then again, you invite the discussion about, well, we certainly qualify because we are the democracy. And yet at the same time, technically speaking, that was not meant to be, because democracy means more dictatorship of the majority,
yeah.
who abuse the rights of the minority. And the founders did not want that. And therefore, they never put the word democracy in the Constitution. And they talked about a republic. Of course, you can't. Even with a republic, you can't say, well, how are you going to get a leader? You would have to concede that some elections would work. But you're pointing out where somebody who is dictatorial, but he's more attuned to looking at the demands of the people. Some people argued, and I think some of the Austrian economists like Mises and others argued, well, what really counts is the attitude of the people. These governments don't exist unless they're endorsed by the government. I tend to believe that, but I think there's a lot of pain and suffering till you get rid of the bad guys. But you have to have support from the people, and even the dictators of the kings and the pharaohs of old, if they overstepped the bounds and the people rebelled, they could change the government. So, but I think this is a gross distortion for them to try to decide who's democratic and who isn't. I think the closer to home that you decide your problems, I think definitions are important about what rights are. I also think that from a libertarian viewpoint, we should have definitely some rules. And of course, I think the rule of non-aggression is a perfect rule for a lot of different groups to attuned to, and I think even a person that is, a king or a leader that tends to follow these views, that people shouldn't have the right to lie, cheat, steal, hurt people, or kill.
Yeah.
And if you did that, nobody can do that, and governments can't do that. You know, if I had a true believer that was the so-called leader of the country, of course, if he followed that rule, he wouldn't be wanting to dictate our lives, and he wouldn't want to be dictating other countries. He wouldn't want to say, boy, what the most important thing we do now is pick and choose. If we don't have control of the UN Human Rights Council, we're going to just go home. But what I would like to do is encourage this attitude, but broaden it and have people look at it from a principle stand of what's wrong with that, even though there might be a minimal gain by just getting out. But I think it should make the point, why are we in? And so many people for so many years have argued the case against the United Nations. And Trump's, I think, has done some good.
Yeah.
It's just that we don't know what the consequence will be, because he has said some things about NATO, but then he said, well, if they pay their bills, I guess we'll work it out. So
probably similar there. You know, the issue really, you brought it up earlier about the U.S. What about the U.S.? What about the U.S. record? And I think there are contradictions that are just too prominent, too strong to ignore. And there's this hypocrisy of the U.S. that's bombing seven countries. It's created chaos in places like Libya and Iraq and Syria. A million Iraqis may have died because of a lie-based invasion. And here's Nikki Haley. This is what she said. This is why. This is what she said in her letter. The U.S. will continue to be a world leader in calling for human rights for all people and enforcing international attention into mass atrocities. It's just getting harder to ignore that the U.S. global military empire is the very place, is the very organization committing these mass atrocities. So it's just difficult to pass the laugh test when the U.S. does this. So we need to clean up our own act, I think, first, and that way at least we do have some control over.
Very good. And I remember one time in a committee I brought up that same subject, and it was they were trying to figure out how they could punish the Chinese more. And I said, well, yeah, that is a pretty good idea, but I argued against the case that we have the literal responsibility to march over to China and straighten out their rules. I said, we ought to still look to ourselves and find out if there's any abuse of civil liberties here at home. And when you think of the laws, the drug laws being enforced, there's a lot of discrimination there. And when you think of the abuse of our military operations overseas, and if you think of the abuse of protecting civil liberties and human rights, if you want to call that, from our agencies of government, you know, whether it's whether it's the FBI or the CIA or whatever, they're abusing our rights and liberties all the time. We have a job on our hand, and we should concentrate on it. And if we want to change things, I think the most we can offer, and probably the most practical thing, is to set a standard. And people will say, you know, they have a good system there. And there was a bit of that after in our early years. People wanted to be like America. And yet today, less and less people want to be like America because they feel like they've been put under the thumb of America. And I think a lot of people will see through this. This internationally, this will be turned into a strong negative, getting out of the council. But if it were done in a spirit of approaching these problems in a different manner and looking at national sovereignty and individual liberty, I think there would be a different attitude. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.